presented by TSMC.
Hey, good morning. I am Playbook co-author Eugene Daniels. It is Thursday, April 25th. Here's what's driving the day. First up, an Arizona grand jury has indicted 18 allies of former President Donald Trump for their efforts to subvert the 2020 election. Those include the former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows and attorneys Rudy Giuliani and Boris Epstein. The indictment includes felony counts of fraud, forgery, and conspiracy, and it also describes Donald Trump as an unindicted co-conspirator. Seven of the defendants, including Meadows, Giuliani, and Epstein, those names are redacted, but the document makes it pretty clear who they are because it describes their roles. If you're listening to this podcast, these other names you have definitely heard. Attorneys John Eastman, Jenna Ellis, and Christina Bobb. Also, Trump 2020 campaign operative Mike Roman. The indictment reads, defendants and unindicted co-conspirators schemed to prevent the lawful transfer of the presidency to keep unindicted co-conspirator 1 in office against the will of Arizona's voters. And in that vein, former President Trump will be in criminal court again in New York City for the hush money case. But also in D.C., the Supreme Court will hear arguments over President Trump's claim that criminal charges against him in his federal election subversion case have to be thrown out because the Constitution makes him basically immune from being prosecuted for any actions he took as president.
And joining me now to talk about Trump's huge day in different types of court is Politico magazine columnist, the writer of Rules of Law, and a former prosecutor, Ankush Kadori. Ankush, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Big ass day for the legal community and Trump today. I want to start at the Supreme Court. Today is the oral arguments for that case. And as you're thinking about this, one, it's been a long road. How are you, as someone who has been paying a lot of attention to this, thinking about what today looks like and why?
Yeah, I mean, I am very frustrated that this day is even occurring, quite honestly, that the Supreme Court is hearing our oral argument on this at all, much less on this schedule. I think Trump's arguments are ridiculous. I think the notion that he would be immune from criminal prosecution for trying to steal a presidential election is nonsense in the United States of America. And, you know, Jack Smith, the Justice Department prosecutor, special counsel who's handling this case, he tried to go to the Supreme Court back in December. He tried to go straight to the Supreme Court back in December, and they said no. All right, so then he goes to the DC Circuit Court of Appeals. That court issues a very solid ruling. And to my mind, if the Supreme Court was going to let it unfold that way, they should have reviewed that ruling, taken a few days with it, issued a 5-10 page opinion saying, that's a good opinion, we're affirming it, back to you, Judge Chutkan. But instead, they, you know, set it for oral argument on this somewhat relaxed schedule. I know that there are court commentators and law professors who will tell you that this is always how it works, but this is a categorically different type of year. So I don't really care what the law professors who have too much time on their hands are telling everyone about how this should normally work and blah, 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 blah. This should have been resolved quickly and easily and narrowly.
On that point, does it tell us anything that they took so long to actually get to this?
Yeah. I think it tells us some potentially disturbing things about the conservative justices' interest in or lack thereof, in seeing this trial in Washington occur before Election Day, despite the fact that, as our polling has showed, a sizable majority of the public believes that this trial should occur before Election Day, somewhere around 60%, according to polls that we have done at Politico and other outlets have done. You know, the fact that it was set on this schedule already has resulted in a delay that has imperiled potentially fatally, the prospect for this trial even occurring before November. Even if the Supreme Court issues its ruling by the end of June, that's going to leave a very narrow window, and it's going to be complicated by the political calendar. So this delay has already accrued to Trump's benefit because this trial was supposed to occur in March. Remember? I mean, Trump's first trial was not supposed to be the hush money case. He's already, you know, benefited from the delay. And the fact that it's set for argument, I mean, I'm worried that, you know, some of these conservative justices are going to try to complicate this issue by coming up with all sorts of hypotheticals and what if this, that, or the other in some future hypothetical universe. Again, this is law professor stuff that is just all well and good in the normal case. But I don't think the justices need to go as far afield on all of this. They don't. They could just affirm what the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals did in a very thorough and compelling opinion. And, you know, what I will be watching for at this argument is if some of the justices are positing these sorts of hypotheticals and even contemplating setting a totally new standard or test for Judge Chutkan to have to apply before proceeding to trial.
Well, that's not the only place where the name Trump's going to be spoken in a court today. In New York, as you mentioned, former President Donald Trump is going to be in criminal court again. But also, we have this kind of outstanding question on the gag order, and we're still kind of waiting for the judge to order there. What do you think could happen? What do you think should happen?
Okay. So what will happen is, I expect, he will be fined, right? Like, what, I don't know how many truths are at issue at this point. It's like 10 or 15 or whatever. Whatever, it'll be 10,000, 15,000 at the end of the day. And hopefully that'll deter him. But I think that there are a couple of other things that the prosecutors could be doing here that would actually be much more effective in using these truths. And a couple of ideas. One, and they alluded to this last week, which was that when Trump is tweeting about witnesses, or the fact that he's tweeting about witnesses, has led the DA's office to be reluctant to share their witness list in advance of trial days. Now, I know that sounds like a very sort of technical lawyerly thing, but trust me, in a trial, if you are the defense lawyer and you do not know which witnesses are going on which days, your team can't prepare. You don't know which lawyer needs to prepare to on their feet to cross-examine which witness. You don't know what documents you necessarily need to have ready to put into evidence on cross. Those are the sorts of things that can actually really screw up a litigation. And then second, and by the way, that's much, much more impactful than $15,000, much more. The second would be, it's easy for me to say this from afar, so I don't want to be too cute about it, but I would be kind of inclined to just let Trump tweet through this. And because what the prosecutors can do is let him tweet all he wants. If he takes the stand, or at the close of their case, if he doesn't, dump all of those tweets into evidence. And I know that they're called truths, whatever, or X's. I don't care. But take all of his little missives, dump them into evidence, show them to the jurors. Right? And all of that comes in because those are his own words. So that's all admissible. And show the jurors, this is what this man was doing while he was on trial. He was insulting you. He was insulting the witnesses. He was lying about the witnesses. He was lying about this being a liberal conspiracy. This is how seriously he's taking this case. He did or didn't testify. That remains to be seen. But if I were the prosecutors, I would want the jurors to see all of this.
I mean, if we know anything about Donald Trump, he's not going to stop posting or talking. And also, he's still on he's still trying to win an election, so he'll be doing that at some point. Last weekend, his event was canceled because of rain, so he hasn't gotten to do his hour-long soliloquy of how he's feeling about this. Anku, thank you so much. I know you have a lot to do, a lot to watch today, so we appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
And for your schedule today, the Senate and the House are out, but President Biden will be in New York, Syracuse to be exact, this afternoon. He's going to deliver remarks on the CHIPS and Science Act. I'm Eugene Daniels. We're so close to Nerd Prom, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening.
TSMC is at the forefront of driving advanced technology forward. At the TSMC North America Technology Symposium, the company highlighted its latest semiconductor process, advanced packaging, and 3D IC stacking technologies, all designed to power the AI revolution. The showcase technologies are aimed at improving system performance, reducing power consumption, and optimizing design space, all of which are crucial for those working on groundbreaking technological innovations.